Mr. Hobson, real far.
All the buildings around there is just rubble. And it used to be an earthquake, because the whole blocks and blocks and blocks are just rubble. Remember, this is 1941, July 41. But this had happened 12 months earlier, and they've been cleaning up since then. So what is right when it first happened, I believe all the roads are all blocked. Another thing happened was on the dock, there was an ammunition ship in a Husserl dock, and it got hit with an incendiary or something like that, it went on fire. And they tried to move it or get it out, and it blew up, and it actually damaged the dock to such an extent that it could never be used again. And they found plates belonging to that ship a mile inside Liverpool. But you know, there's such a power of the explosion. And when now that I started here, I used to venture more and go across the Mersey and all that. And there's quite a few sunken wrecks in the Mersey. And I believe they've been a lot more moved because they're in the way. And the most essential one, one's one of the most obstruction ones I've been faced. And it was quite a while before they removed them all. There's one you have to go down below and actually cut it up because you couldn't blow it up. It was on top of the music hall. And that's about all. I've never seen dogfights over there. And another thing I remember is rockets. We used to see these rockets shoot up the air from Birkenhead Way. And we were told that the new rockets they were testing out. You know, people talk about rockets now, like bazookas and things like that, but these anti-aircraft rockets were actually testing out them. I don't know how true it was. And then, another thing is to say, when I was 13, I was a paper lad. Now, a paper lad today is nothing compared to later during that particular time. Because no transport for delivering papers. Papers had to go the shortest possible way by vehicle. Then they went by anywhere, such as we used to get all our mail all our papers by train. Like in London, they print the papers on Manchester, they print the papers, you take them down to the railway station, put them on the trains, and you send up the station, and you have to go pick them up. Well, that used to be my job at 6 o'clock in the morning, don't pick the papers up. Well, sometimes the transport was that bad with the bombing that it wouldn't come through till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And you know, as I say, I used to go up 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, during that time I was waiting for the train to come in, I used to be sitting on the road, on the bridge, on the railway bridge. And you see all the transport going down, the doctors and convoys, of anti-aircraft guns, field guns, tanks, anything to do with the army, or air force, anything. You see going down the docks miles and miles of it. And I found out that used to be happening all night. You used to see German airplanes on these long loaders along the RAF going down. Something used to be wrecked. And weeks and weeks later, you see the same aircraft coming back all done up. And we found out that what they used to use them for reconnaissance planes over Germany. And the bottom of them, I don't know how true, the bottom used to be painted in the German signal, and the top of them used to be painted in the RAF ones. So they used to be for both sides to recognise them. That's all I can remember during the war, except it was hard getting food and this and that. And people used to, when the bombing was on, especially in the summer, the main blitz, the people in the town that used to get horse and carts, any old cart, and they used to be moving out of the country, because there was nowhere to shelter in the town. So they used to go in the country and sleep in the barns away from the bombing, because that was the only safe place it could be. The rent is lucky in London regards to the tubes. So, and then in the morning, you see them all tracing back again. That's about all I can remember of the actual main bits.
What was your address in that
exactly.
town? Can you remember the street?
Yeah, Hammersmith Road, exactly. It's Harris or Harry Smith. H-A-R-R-I-S-M-I-T-H.
What was public morale like under the bombing, do you think?
It was very good. It was, I reckon public morale was better than it is now.
So it didn't crack?
No way did it crack. Everybody pulled together. In fact, you could walk down the street black and you weren't scared. You didn't think they were scared about the bomb or that, but you were never scared of another human being.
Was there any looting of bombed properties?
Well, put it this way, I must say there wasn't, but I never heard of any. And there was always an exception to the rule, but everybody used to pull together.
What did people think of the German pilots who were carrying out the bombing?
They called all kinds of names.
Were they hated?
Well, all the Germans were hated. I mean, it's only natural. I mean, but remember, they hadn't come face to face. I mean, you have a nation like Germany or fighting you, you hate them. But when it's individuals, you get to know them, you can change your mind.
Now, just two things that I'd like you to say something about in your military experience. I think you were in Greece. Was it with the RUR?
No. When I was in Greece, I was in the King's Liverpool Regiment.
Which battalion?
The 2nd Battalion.
When were you there?
In February 46. I left there about August, September 46.
What job were you supposed to be doing?
Well, as a battalion, our job was to keep control, the country stable, because it was just after war, so they're trying to organise the army, they're trying to organise the government and get control, and you had the communists who were trying to get control, which was called the ELAS. And so the basic speaking of the British Army was to keep the country under control, and so they can get the democracy back in back again.
Whereabouts were you stationed?
Well, we're in a place called Veria, which is on the main road from Salonika to Athens, and also in a place called Kasani, which was a staging camp in a valley up in the mountain range between the two. My particular job there was sterilising and delivering water. And I used to deliver water to there. Only to our battalion. So that was my job, just giving fresh drinking water to all the battalion. And then after that, we moved out. And we were going to go to the Sudan, so we got to Port Said, and the idea was to get a train from Port Said up in the Sudan. But while we were there, all this changed, and we were going to be diverted to Cyprus, because they had the illegal Jewish immigrants in Cyprus. And in Famagusta, the regiment that was guarding the camps there of Jews had lost control of it. So they wanted our regiment to move in and take control. And we were rushed over there and we took over from this other regiment, South Bend Borders, I think it was. In Liverpool, that we still got them under control. And my job there was delivering water again to our camp.
How did you have to get them under control?
Well, so they were demanding this and setting fire to the tents and that. And our job was to fire over the heads and show them that we meant business. And when he started fires, that was one of my jobs between delivering water, was get the hose pipe of the thing and put the fires out. And it turned out that the water trucks the other people had wouldn't reach that far. But when they came along and we found out my water truck, I could spray them with water, put the fires out and all that. That was one thing to stop them from lighting fires. But I'd say we got them under control. these callers bullies. And then, and after that, well, once we got them under control and time went on, we then we realised we weren't as bad as we had a job to do.
Whereabouts in Cyprus was it?
That was in Famagusta.
What type of things were the Jews doing?
Well, they usually had two fences, 12-foot fences, 12-foot wide, like a tree pole with barbed wire or something, typical. And they were burning the inside fences down because the water up the hose pipe didn't have the pressure to reach that far. So when I came along, they started laughing at me. As soon as I put the hose on a fire, I put it on them first and drowned them all. And then they all backed up and put the fires out and a tent that was in the area. And they just stopped feeding because they knew we could fight them with them. Plus, as I say, the infantry men, they went in and they were sorting them out. And I'd have been bullying them, not like that, get them under control. And because when you used to fire rifles, you used to have to fire them up in the air, it was like that. So no, because it didn't hit anybody.
But if the Jews knew that you were just firing over their heads, they could just surely ignore.
I know. The thing is, if somebody's firing and they fire over their heads, it doesn't take much to send command. So, I mean, you're on the receiving end. You don't know what they're thinking. They know the soldiers mustn't shoot you, but they don't know how far you will go.
How long were you there for?
Well, I was actually in Cyprus for another 9 months, and I was taken off the water truck, which I won't go into, conservatory. And they put me into an ordinary company. And when I went to this ordinary company, they took all the details, asked me when they joined the battalion, told them, when they had me leave. I said, I haven't had no leave. You've had no leave, you've been here. You only supposed to have leave after 12 months. So anyhow, I was sent over here, and I got held up on port side with the vaccinations because I'm immune from smallpox. But they said, you can't be immune, so they wouldn't send me over first. Anyhow, eventually, after a few weeks of going, I was on leave for 5 weeks, and while I was home, the whole battalion broke down with the typhoid with the water. So when we came back to join the battalion and get back to port side, I was holed up there, so I had to find out why I wasn't moving. And they got air guns in regiments, and they said, you're not going back to your regiments, you're going to a company on detachment in Tobruk. So I went out there, I got there for six, while we were out there, our job was supervising 18,000 German prisoners of war, the company were. And we were in the desert. And what the prisoners of war did, they used to get demobbed, like it was a soldier. But they used to get stars. And the reason they got demobbed like it was a soldier, we found out that they all couldn't be released after the war because Germany couldn't take them. We didn't have the food or the housing or anything. So we used to have to release them the same as the door disorder. But they had to earn stars. And according to the job, it was how many stars he got. So there's a man working a cookhouse. This is only an example, not saying it's fact. A man working a cookhouse would get one star for 12 months' worth. A man who's working in the desert, disarming ammunition, because there's loads and loads of ammunition out there, and stripping it all down, it's a dangerous job, he might get 3 stars 1 year. So when he had a certain number of stars, he was sent home. And that's how it was. So every now and again, there might be a holdup in the release. And that's when we used to find out first, and we used to send the patrol out in the desert, because the only way to get out was through Egypt. It was too far for them to walk, and the other way to get out was to steal an old truck and drive out. And there was only one rode out. They couldn't go across the desert because they had big tank traps far across the desert. So the only way you could get a vehicle out was through this gap. So we used to go out to this gap, a couple of days beforehand, lay up and wait. And when they came, we used to nab them. And then we did that once or twice and took them back on. And then when the time came, we went back to Cyprus. And I and Greg, and all the drivers, and I was driving in the desert, because with me being a driver, he'd give me a driving job. And when we went back to Cyprus, all the drivers were sent back to HQ to be a driver. But as what happened previously with the media and the war problem and going off, which I won't explain why, that wasn't my fault, like, and all the trouble with the time for me. We went back into HQ. So the officer at our company got me a job as a driver instructor on armored cars. So I finished my time up as driver instructor on armored cars. And then in March 1946, 1948, I got released on the mob number 69.
So, what time were you in Tobruk doing this job with the POWs?
Let me see now. June 47 to about December 47.
What did you feel about the German POWs?
Just like us, you know. Yeah. Oh, you had the Nazis there. Well, they were kept separate. They were aggressive. But the normal German prisoner of war were no different than what we were.
So the Nazis were kept separate?
They were kept separate. Because they were stayed up trouble for the normal Germans. But at all, I think not discounting the actual Nazis, the bad ones, the average German prisoner of war we met, we had no trouble at all with them. They were very helpful. And it wasn't that they were trying to get something off you. It was genuine, you know. As I say, we used to have no trouble with them. We used to have German prisoners of war who was off coops, and they used to do the odd jobs around the place. I was German prisoner of war who were rebuilding Tobruk, because Tobruk was a closed city, no civilians allowed in, just military. And other places weren't being used. But the German prisoners of war, they were rebuilding it, the sewers, the water mains, and all they were doing it for was to occupy their mine. Plus, they would get it ready for when the actual town was handed over to the civilians. But when we were in Tobruk, the harbour there was just littered with wrecks, ships, that was German ships sunk there, you know. And about 18 miles inland was at Laban Airfield. Because we used to go up there now again, delivering stuff to the airfield.
And what dates were, do you think you were dealing with the illegal Jewish immigrants in Cyprus, in Famagusta?
Well, with the illegal Jewish immigrants, this is my own personal opinion, we were more or less holding them because the country wasn't ready to take them. There was a big political thing going on in Palestine at the time. And we had to be very wary with the Arabs, because after the 1914 war, we promised the Arabs that Palestine would be the Arab country, not, you know, because they helped us during the 1914-18 war. So we didn't want them to go in and upset the Arabs. The Americans wanted them to go in, so we're trying to sort the lot out. So we were, all the people who went, all the Jews that went into Palestine, we drowned them and hold them in camps in Cyprus. There was camps in Famagusta, Nicosia, Larnaca, and Limassol. And that was the idea of holding them. I find out that a lot of them were very arrogant. Because we used to, when they used to be coming in, we used to ask them their names, what country they were born in. So we used to write, say they were born in Germany, for instance, and we used to say, German, no, I'm Jewish. You say, no, you're German, but your religion is Jewish. Your race could be Jewish, but your nationality is German. And they just wouldn't have it. I met some girls, you know, teenage girls who come from England as immigrants. And they were worse than the ones from the displaced people. They were very bombastic. I'm going to Israel. I said, there's no such place as Israel. It's Palestine. And you're not going there. It's my homeland. I said, you're English. Not, I'm Jewish.
But do you remember the dates that you were doing this job?
Pardon?
The dates. Which months?
When I was doing the job in Augusta, our battalion was guarding the camps, and I was delivering water. That was in November 1946 until beginning of May 1947.
Now, just going back to Greece.
I was in Tobruk from June 46 to about November 47. And then from November 47 to March 48, I was in Cyprus on armored cars. And that was stationed in Nicosia. But then I used to go to Laos, they go to different camps. As we were moving along the road in convoys, odd job. Was escorting them on the armored cars. Because we found out that if you had any trouble, which they did have at that time, they used to fight over their heads. But the political situation was getting that bad, they didn't want anyone to be killed. And he didn't trust the ordinary soldier in case somebody fired low. So what they used to do is use the armored cars with Browning machine guns or fixed turret. So if you pointed it, it fired there, you know what I mean? Not a freestanding, fixed up. And what we used to do was fire over the tops of them, and the rounds we had was armor piercing, tracer, and incendiary. And we used to fire higher and go lower and lower. I kept going lower. And when we got just above the tents, the light used to stop. We were told never to go any lower light, but they didn't know that.
And who were rioting there?
The Jews. I should have only been there about 2.5 years as prisoners.
Now, could I just go back to Greece in 1946? Was it a peaceful time for your battalion, or was there any trouble there?
It was a peaceful time. We had to be on our guard, you know what I mean? Just be wary. But it was actually a peaceful time. The main trouble was mainly between the ELAS, which is the communists, and the government forces. Well, our job was a backup for the government forces.
So, did you come across any ELAS?
Yeah, I came across ELAS because I used to have to go in the mountains to a summer camp to deliver water. And I was supposed to carry a Sten gun with me, but I didn't. I stripped it down and kept it in the kit bag, which I found out was a good thing. But I was stopped by the ELAS, thinking I had petrol. And so they checked out what I had. I saw it in water. I'm on my own. They searched my cab. And as I was only carrying water, and I didn't carry any weapons, he treated me as peaceful and let me go. And every time I used to spot them out again, he always used to wave.
How did you know they were ELAS?
Well, like they were guerrillas, they were, you know, they lived in the mountains. And they had all, you know, like typical guerrillas, you know, all the bandoliers and Russian guns and all that.
Did you feel safe or unsafe when you went about in Greece?
I felt safe. Well, I was a bit weary when I first went there, but once I'd been stopped by the ELAS, and I didn't have any weapons with me, and I was carrying water, and they knew my vehicle. It turned out all the local people knew me and my vehicle. You know, I And the only vehicle that type in that area. And then I was never stopped at that. If he saw me, he used to just wave.
What was the attitude of the Greek civilians towards the British Army being there?
They say the majority of the British, of the Greek civilians welcomed us. But they wanted us to go home when they were ready, you know, when their country was ready. And while we were there, they've actually caught some of the guerrillas and used to treat them, used to shoot them. They used to lie in the middle of the square in the village and show them off to the people. And when they were finished showing off, used to tie the legs of the back of vehicles and tow them away.
Did you see it?
Oh, I used to see it. But we couldn't interfere.
How did the civilians react to that?
Well, I don't know how they reacted personally. I think it was the idea to put the fear of God anybody was thinking about joining the guerrillas.
How many people did you see treated like that?
I saw about three groups, and there were really a small number, between three and six people each time. I mean, how many times they were told, I don't know, it's only what I actually saw myself.
Were they alive or dead when they were told?
Well, I saw them, they were dead.